Okay, this hour we're going to take your phone calls, questions for Dr. David Hanscom, or I'd love for you to share your chronic pain stories. If you've been in chronic pain, check in with us. What has life been like for you? Maybe the doctor can give you a few tips. His book is called Back in Control, and we will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Dr. David Hanscom with us, Back in Control. How did you end up being an orthopedic surgeon, David? How did that happen for you?
Well, it was sort of by accident. I simply applied for an orthopedic residency in Hawaii on my honeymoon to write the trip off.
Smart.
And then I get a phone call. And 2 years later, I said, do you want to be an orthopedic surgeon in Hawaii? And I was doing internal medicine at the time in Spokane, Washington, and I loved it. I was planning on doing that. But, you know, Hawaii sounded pretty good, so that's what I did.
What island did you go to?
Oahu, at Queens Hospital there.
Okay.
On Oahu.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good spot.
Yeah. So, it was not a lot of thought behind that one, I'll have to admit.
Did you miss it?
You mean miss the Hawaii? Or
yeah, the environment and all that?
Well, I loved Hawaii, but, you know, it's expensive and it's crowded. A lot of people go over there for a few years and they have to leave because they just can't afford to live there. So it's a tricky place to live. I loved it, the variety, the island, et cetera, but it's a challenging place to live for a lot of people.
I'm going to tell you a story. I may have mentioned that to you when you were on with me last time, of a friend of mine who 5 years ago now, right around Thanksgiving, tripped going up some steps in a nightclub. And he had stenosis. He was walking with kind of a gimp anyway. He had a little pain there, but he had stenosis. He fell, David, and he hit his neck and his face straight on the floor. And it kind of like snapped him back a little bit.
Okay.
And to this day, he is still paralyzed from the neck down. I mean, he can move his arm maybe 5 inches up, and that's about it. What the heck did he do?
Well, if you have bone spurs in your spine, I'm trying to think of a good analogy here. It's just that if you snap your neck, it's like punching the spinal cord. So if you don't have those bone spurs and you fall, you're not hitting your spinal cord against anything. But if the bone spurs against the spinal cord, it's a sharp point, and then you hit that jarring point, it's like probably like punching it directly. We call it a contusion, and then what happens, it starts to swell. Then as it starts to swell, then it cuts off the blood supply, and it can be a problem. This is a completely different topic, but some extremely exciting technology is now available out of Germany and now coming to Seattle. Was originated in Japan, where they're taking people with spinal cord injuries, usually incomplete, where they put them in a robot, where the robot senses the impulses coming from the brain to the muscle, it starts to move the legs in conjunction with the neurological impulses. What they didn't anticipate is, first of all, the gait is much better. People can stand up and actually walk, mm-hmm. You know, reasonably well.
And when you say robot, what do you mean by that?
It's an external plastic shell, like the Star Wars-type robot. That's what it looks like. They call it HAL. And then what happens is the brain starts to get programmed, and people start to walk. They walk out of their shells.
Without the robot?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the first thing we've ever seen that actually holds some promise for spinal cord injury. We're just shocked. And then in Brazil, they had a study of 8 patients with actually complete spinal cord lesions who they did a similar protocol on.
Like he has, I would guess, right?
Yeah. And they didn't go to normal, but they improved their ability to transfer, stand up, do different things. It's unbelievable. It's the first thing we've ever seen in my career that I've seen something that holds that much promise.
They gave him, they did surgery like the day after he fell. He really didn't want to go through with it, but the doctors insisted that he do that. And
right.
And nothing really happened. Nothing happened.
Yeah. No, it's a horrible thing. That's a terrible, terrible thing to do. I just fell in a restaurant 2 weeks ago and fractured 6 of my ribs.
You did? What did you do?
I've had bad knees, and I've been working really hard on rehabbing my knees. I went skiing in Park City with my son and daughter and to have the best. It's like a monumental day. And I walked into a restaurant and my ski boots went out from under me. The next thing I hit, I crushed my left rib cage.
Ouch.
And the next website post I'm going to write is going to be titled An Apology to My Patients That I Wish I Could Help You, But I Can't. In other words, trust me, surgeons really do. And I'm not being, I don't be negative on surgery. We really do want to help you in your pain. and I have never had pain like this.
Oh my God! You can't breathe. It's hard to breathe when your ribs are all busted.
Oh, it was horrible. I've never remotely been exposed to that kind of pain, but yeah, very humbling experience. And again, you know, I just think living in chronic pain is the worst part of the human experience. It's horrible.
As far as the knees, what about titanium?
Well, you know, the data shows that you can actually rehab your knees, even with bone on bone arthritis, and have the pain going away, and that's exactly what happened to me. It took me a couple of years. But I was skiing moguls. I was back skiing the moguls last week or 2 weeks ago, and my knees are fine.
Well, we've got a slew of phone calls here for you, questions, and also pain stories, and we're going to Germany right now. Jackie's with us on Skype. Hi, Jackie. Go ahead.
Hi there. I was very interested once I heard you guys talking because it didn't occur to me that something like IBS would be chronic pain. I mean, I understand it to be a pain in the... But right. it has caused differences for my life in my functioning. And right. From that perspective, yes, it's painful because I have to take care of that before I can leave the house.
Right.
And so from what you said... I think that you have ideas on how to make life for someone like me a little bit better.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, I'm not an expert on IBS, but it's one of those symptoms that we, again, talk to patients, and as you decrease the body's adrenaline, in other words, you optimize your body's chemistry, is that those symptoms start to drop down. And so adrenaline basically shuts down the blood supply to your gut. And so as that chemical change takes place, your gut reacts all sorts of different ways. And what you're doing is you train your brain literally to respond to the environment in a more relaxed manner. Your body chemistry improves and these symptoms start to improve. Now, again, it's always a multi-pronged approach. So I'm assuming for a while medications would help, et cetera, different mm-hmm. programs would help. And again, it would be a multi-pronged approach in that arena as well as the spine arena. But yeah, no, it's one of those root cause things that helps the rest of this treatment be successful.
Good luck, Jackie. Is it your preference, David, to get people off pain pills?
Yeah, absolutely, and they do. I have one woman who was in a wheelchair for 10 years on high-dose narcotics, about 800 milligrams a day. And over about 6 months, she came out of the wheelchair, no pain, no meds.
Wow.
It's just incredibly rewarding.
Once they do this and get pain-free through this process, what are the odds of the pain coming back?
100%. So here's the deal. I wrote a website post called Feeling Well, because the pain pathways are permanent. And I'll use the word pain-free for 15 years, but as my wife points out, as wives do, that if I quit doing my running exercises or I get fired up or I get frustrated or go in the victim mode, my pain comes back in about 2 weeks. So if I quit using the tools, which are simple, by the way, that I teach my patients, these pathways are permanent, they get triggered. But at least I'm aware I'm triggered. I know how to come out of the pathways much quicker. It might be a day or two versus weeks. And so I say, look, this is a process of learning how to feel. I mean, as you know, life is never pain-free, right? That's not reality. And so as you learn how to go through and process these different stresses and calm down the nervous system with these different triggers, and it brings up another fascinating point that there's a recent research paper that shows if you suppress thoughts and emotions, it actually damages the hippocampus of your brain, which is the memory center. So when you get upset, it's important not to suppress it. You know, deal with it. You have to learn to feel anxious. You have to learn to feel upset. Learn to live with it. Then if you quit reacting to it as much, then you start to function more easily.
Let's go to Ted in Des Moines, Iowa now. Hello, Ted. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
I
was real interested in the part of the sleep aspect. I am. I've got an L1, L2 lower back bulging disc. I got that at work comp, and another work comp when I was on the road, got in a car accident. Somebody cut in front of me, hit him at 60 miles an hour.
Ouch.
Now I got musculoskeletal issues through the chest, through the mid-back, neck, and I can only get about 5 hours of sleep, and then my body wakes me up because I'm in so much pain that I've got to go back to the oxycodone, the ibuprofen, the Lyrica, the Emerix. I mean, you name it, they got me on it. And they talk about it's all about pain management. And so I'm in pool therapy, but you talked about the body's ability to heal itself while sleeping. And I've tried different beds. I spent so much money. It's just ridiculous. It just, you know, it just bleeds the bank account, causes that kind of financial stress. Help.
Yeah. Well, no, it's a cycle. I mean, it's all connected. I mean, again, lack of sleep causes the pain, lack of pain. And we do know that when you're in pain, it's hard to sleep. So it does go back and forth. But here's the deal. And again, it's a complicated answer, but still, you're the classic person who can heal. I didn't used to think that. I mean, 20 years ago, I'd say, look, can't help you out. Don't need surgery. Have a good life. Do the best you can. That's just not true. So in the book, I don't remember which chapter it is, there's 8 little steps to start with sleep. And again, it's combined with exercise, with the writing, with life outlook.
Chapter 4, Sleep and Anxiety.
Yeah. So there's the 8 suggestions that go through a sequence of things to look at for sleep. And then I think later in the book, there's a more specific chapter on sleep alone.
Chapter 14.
and somebody knows my book. That's good. And when I was doing it, so basically I started this process myself. In other words, I actually treated my patients. I was in Sun Valley, Idaho for 4 years. And I was a primary care spine doctor for a while. And I would just put people right on medications to start the process, but I took a surgeon's approach. I said, look, if this medication doesn't work, we'll add on another one. So within usually 2 to 4 weeks before we're sleeping, then we could do the rest of the project. Remember, sleep by itself is not the solution. I also tell you this thing called expressive writing has been documented in over 300 research papers to be effective. And the research is way deeper on that than it is on spine surgery, by the way. So the expressive writing, you write down your thoughts, tear them up, that's it. It can be positive or negative, rational or irrational. The reason why people tear these things up is, first of all, to write with freedom, but second of all, not to analyze them. They're just thoughts. So it's been shown that these writing exercises help people fall asleep. Now, it doesn't increase the length of sleep, but it helps people fall asleep. So again, just one little additional tool. So usually a combination of things, probably 90% of the time, eventually will get you to sleep. Then, of course, the pain drops, the sleep gets easier.
David, how many surgeons like you would subscribe to what you talk about here?
Not that many. Not because they're bad guys and girls or women and stuff like that, but we're just not trained this way. And I really would not be sitting here unless I've been through my 15-year, ordeal myself. And so the data is rich on this. There's a paper out of Baltimore that shows only 10% of surgeons actually assess these issues before they do surgery. And the other thing we're finding out, before you make the decision to do surgery, like I told you before, I have almost 60 patients with surgical lesions that have commented on the nervous system and canceled the surgeries with very, very, very tight bone spurs that would have done well with surgery. But what I find out, the bone spurs have been there for years. The pain started maybe 2 months ago. And people have felt horrible family stress, loss of a child, loss of a job, financial issues, horrible stuff. And then when you get them through that situational stress, then the pain goes away. So situational stress is a huge factor in flaring up pain. And the amount of stress people are under these days is horrible. I mean, I can't begin to tell you the story.
Oh, my gosh.
Every day is horrible.
Yeah, and that affects people all over the place.
Yeah.
Are panic attacks tied to that too, doctor?
Yeah. No, panic attacks are right there with the... Yeah, so what happens with panic attacks, your body has a huge adrenaline release, just like you're being chased by a wild animal or a predator. And so what a panic attack is, your body gets this adrenaline surge, which is a fight-or-flight response without actually a real physical threat. So your heart races, you sweat, your muscles contract.
Oh, yeah. You think you're having a heart attack. Something.
Right, and that's how my pain started. I had a panic attack in 1990. I had panic attacks for another 5 years, and they're horrible. They're just really horrible, and you feel like you're going to die. I was driving a car.
Yeah, and you can feel it coming on, too.
Yep. It's horrible. But, again, that's the most enjoyable part of this project is people's anxiety drops, and they come in with a smile, and they're so excited. I mean, I can't begin to tell you how much fun this is.
Mike in Livermore, California. Well, hello there, stranger.
Hi there, George.
Good to have you back. Where have you been?
Well, the last month I've been doing pretty much going through exactly everything he's talking about.
Oh boy, what happened?
Well, a month ago I got rear-ended.
Ugh.
and I was at a dead stop, and the guy hit me at about 40, and my head went through the back window of the truck.
Oh, my God.
Knocked me out for a few seconds, but it triggered, apparently my back has been in bad shape for a long time, and I didn't know it.
And this just magnified it.
Yeah, and then to top it off, 10 days after the accident and I was off work, I got the flu for a week and I was in bed and really weak. And just the past year has been so stressful to me in the fact that I cracked a rib last year at this time and spent 5 days in the hospital. I had that rollover accident in June, which...
We got to change your fate there, Michael. Jeez.
So I'm seeing now, as I'm listening to the show tonight, I'm learning that a lot of this is coming from anxiety with the back pain. What my question is that I'm in the process now of going through workers' comp, and I'm getting kicked up the ladder, and the next rung is to a specialist. And I'm going to get his book before I read it. Will this help me in actually talking with this specialist? Because surgery is not a route I want to go. And, I mean, how do I approach that with him? And in what way do I, you know, what questions can I ask him about surgeries and everything else?
Well, first of all, for the injury you're describing, surgery really is helpful. In fact, when you operate in the presence of chronic pain, the data shows that you can make yourself worse probably 40% of the time with a success rate of about 20%. Again, I don't see your spine, et cetera. Just to be clear, disc degeneration by itself does not cause pain, period. And I know we're taught that, but it's simply not the case. So the bottom line is take control of your care. Right now, the medical profession is not receiving this very well. And it costs maybe $500 to $2,000 for a given person to go to pain-free, which is not making a lot of money for the system. So you'll probably not be received that well. I will also say in workers' comp that you're trapped in a system that makes people really, really upset, which really cranks up the body's adrenaline. And so I have a much harder time helping people in workers' comp let go because they keep sort of being harassed by the state. I don't know what California's like compared to Washington, but I'm actually considering filing a class action lawsuit against the state of Washington with the way they harass their workers. I can't help them. I mean, I feel so frustrated for them because they're shoved around the system. It's arbitrary. They can't get the treatment they need in a timely manner. And you're just trapped. And again, anytime you're trapped, your body chemistry is off and it makes the pain worse. And it's just a horrible cycle. So when you look at the book, this is something you're going to do on your own. Your doctors become your resources and your coaches. And then you navigate your own way through the system, but you have to take charge of your own care.
Okay, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and final phone calls. Don't go away. Dr. David Hanscom, this is our final segment. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and we're talking about his book, Back in Control, A Spine Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain. It is amazing, Doctor, how many people are in chronic pain, isn't it?
It's incredible. It's such a terrible thing, and it's such a rampant thing. And again, we've not developed a very effective treatment model for it. When I give lectures on chronic pain, and I ask the audience of doctors, you know, how many enjoy treating chronic pain, probably less than 5% raise their hands. And it's not because they're not well-intentioned, it's just that they get frustrated. And again, to treat any problem in any arena, you have to have the correct diagnosis. And again, it's a neurological problem. Once you understand that problem, then it's treatable.
You know, when you started doing this, helping people, when you realized that the mind had an amazing effect on this, did it cross any paths of sexes, male, female, children? Does it matter?
No. And we also used to think that if you had pain for more than 18 months that it wasn't solvable. I have one woman who was in chronic pain for 55 years, and she at 79 years old popped out of her pain pathways, and she's now been pain-free for about 3 years.
So it doesn't really matter how long you've had the pain either. And again, that's a variable we thought was important.
Okay, let's go back to final calls. We've got Brenda in Jefferson City, Missouri, east of the Rockies. Hi, Brenda. Any ice out there yet?
I don't know. I haven't been out to look.
All right, stay in. Be safe.
I'm disabled, so I'm not able to go out there and look anyway. I've had chronic back pain since I was 16 years old. I got hurt on a trampoline at school, and I have done other things to it, too, and I was also injured my neck, and it bothers me in my left arm. It didn't bother me, though, until they did surgery on my right shoulder to put a ball in. After they did that, then it started bothering me.
Right. I'm sorry, what surgery was that? I didn't catch that.
I had a ball put on the end of my arm on my right shoulder.
Okay, I got you. So that made your pain worse?
On my neck, but my lower back was injured in 1977 on a trampoline at school. Or no, 1967 on a trampoline at school.
Uh-huh. So did you have a specific question I could answer?
No, I just kind of would like to wonder how I could get it stopped.
Well, how do you stop that kind of crime? And again, would the mind solve that dilemma too, David? Or does there come a point where physical pain caused by, a ball put in your shoulder, you can't overcome that?
Well, no, you can't. I mean, your brain can literally reprogram almost anything, and it sounds crazy, but it's true. And again, when I talked to you a couple of years ago, I was not nearly as sure of this stuff as I am now. But we've watched just amazing stuff happen to people, and I'm just shocked. And as many times as I've seen this happen, somebody walks through the door pain-free, I'm going, what? What's going on? So yeah, it's all of it solvable. I mean, there's an experiment done by Pavlov, the guy who did Pavlov's dog's experiment with the food and the bell. And he would have the dogs, every time the food was given to the dogs, he would ring a bell, and then the bell itself became a reward. He also trained his dogs to put their foot on an electric shock pad for the same thing, and with time, the electric shock pad was fine. They would actually put their paw on that pad to get the food. But it was paw-dependent. If they put the other paw on the pad, the dog would scream. So the brain has to interpret the signal, and you can literally reprogram almost anything you want. It takes repetition, it takes a commitment, and again, it does not matter how long you've been in the pain, it's reprogrammable.
Don in Shreveport, Louisiana. Hello, Don. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome.
I have a question, something I hadn't heard you talk about. My wife has severe scoliosis, kind of started, we're in our 60s now, started about 10 years ago, and terrible osteoporosis as well. So we've seen several doctors, surgery's not an option because of the osteoporosis. And they can see definitely with the way her spine is, it's pinching her nerve. So would your method work if there's a known, problem that's, causing her lower back and that's shooting down her pain, down her leg? You know, she's on pain management now, but it's just continuing getting worse, and she even has a heart condition, too, so her activities are kind of limited.
Yeah, and how old is she?
61.
And then how many degrees is her curve?
Oh,
ballpark.
You would have to ask me that. I mean, it's a noticeable lean. Not only does it lean to the right, forward, but it has a twist as well.
Yeah. So I'm a complex.
It runs in her family, and
yeah, so I'm a deformity surgeon. That's what I do is scoliosis and kyphosis. And they're big operations, and so it's hard to say over the telephone what to do, but again, it's a combination of things. So let's say she was in my office, and we had decided to do the big operation. We would actually treat her osteoporosis. We would get her sleeping. We would get her in the gym, start working out, work on her anxiety, depression type things. I'm sure she's a little depressed about all this. So we call it prehab. In other words, we do these tools before all the elective surgeries, including scoliosis, So I've had a friend of my scoliosis, actually scoliosis patients, avoid the surgery because their pain went away, or we might do a smaller operation to get rid of the leg pain and leave the back pain alone. And so it's hard to say over the telephone, but usually a combination of things can solve that problem. But again, the book gives you the platform to start it, and then it's hard to say after that what to do.
Don, thanks for that. I appreciate that. How many patients come to you and request surgery, or are they aware of this kind of pain management?
Well, most people are not aware of this pain. Again, it's not pain management. It's actually solving the pain. It's just really been a different...
Yeah, management means it stays. You get rid of it altogether.
Yeah,
it's
gone. Well, they get rid of it. So, yeah, no, the pain does go away. So not many people are aware of this. And then it's interesting as a surgeon, you're sort of taught as a surgeon, or you get the impression that if somebody comes in with a surgical lesion, that they want surgery. Well, guess what? Most people don't want surgery. I mean, it's a risk. I mean, why would you want to do that? So that's been fascinating to me because my paradigm shifted about 15 years ago. I realized that actually when you talk to people a little bit, why most people really don't want surgery, they just want their pain to go away. But again, it's really incredibly rewarding to see a surgical patient even, but any patient go to pain-free with just minimal interventions.
Next up, we go to Mike in Cleveland. Thanks for holding, Michael. Go ahead. Mike, you're still...
Hello?
Yep, go ahead, Mike.
Hi, George.
Hey there.
Doctor, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for calling in.
Drove truck for millions of miles.
Oh, I bet you pounded your back, didn't you?
Well, you know what? I did because, you know what? Just because the invention of the air seats was supposed to help soften the blow, well, I think my spine fell through my butt. That's how I feel. But, you know, after a while, you just become numb to it. And you don't care. It's okay. You know, you just do what you got to do. You're going to work. And like the doctor says, you know, you get away from that. Now, years ago, I was in an accident. I wasn't driving, but the person that was, I fell through a windshield. I got tossed out, and it hit my back.
God, you're lucky you didn't cut your head off.
Yeah, I was lucky. I was out in the snow in my skivvies, but I got hit pretty hard. And since then, also being a former Marine, you know, you're supposed to ignore pain. And you're programmed to do that. So I would like the doctor's opinion on how somebody can endure this all their life. I'm 54 years old now.
Right. And you're having mostly back pain, is that correct?
I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I really don't. Because I don't want to go to VA because they're, as far as I'm concerned, they're meat cutters. They don't care.
Well, yeah, it's a tricky situation. I mean, again, I would still look at the variables. Everybody's different, and I've seen very, very few people that have not gotten better at some point. You know, the biggest thing is people say they try for a month or two and they quit. Again, most people within 3 to 6 months get better. I've had people I've given up on and said, well, not going to work, and all of a sudden I get an email a couple years later saying, I'm fine. So it's a process of just sort of learning about the pain, plugging away the variables, find out what works for you, what doesn't. And then the biggest part is once you take control of your own care, things start to happen. And you use a VA for this, you use another doctor for that. Surgery isn't usually required, but sometimes it's required. So once you start taking charge of your own care, that in of itself starts dropping down your body's chemistry. The sense of control. When you're out of control and you're angry and frustrated, because you're probably more than frustrated by being trapped by the pain, then it cranks up your body's chemistry, and then you actually feel the pain more. But yeah, you're 54 years old. You get another 30 years to go. You really don't want to keep doing this. And it is a solvable problem. Doesn't matter what the problem is. It actually is solvable.
Generally, go ahead, David.
Can I import one more thing?
Sure.
I will tell you that I was traveling down towards Phoenix out of Las Vegas, driving my truck, and totally lost control of everything. I could see. It was blurry. But I could see. But I couldn't move my legs. I couldn't move my arms. I couldn't. And at that time, you know, the route down there was kind of hairy. I was going down a hill, and I mean to tell you, I was scared. That was the first time.
You thought it was over.
Traveling through the United States, that's the first time I was scared.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what happens sometimes. The nervous system just absolutely shuts down completely. It's a hard stop, and it's scary. It does happen. So.
Let's go next to Shirley in Whitehall, Pennsylvania now. Shirley, go ahead.
Wonderful that I finally got through.
Perfect.
16 years ago, I was rear-ended by a truck. I was parked at a traffic light. An electric shock went through my whole body, and I have been dizzy and in pain ever since. No one's able to help me. And they're telling me lately if I take Zoloft, that would cure my problems, maybe. So pain, dizzy,
right.
And life is just unbearable.
Right. So let me say a couple things here. I keep forgetting to say this. So first of all, people read my book, and they still hurt. So I get emails all the time saying, Dr. Hanscom, I read your book, I still hurt. I go, I get it. Reading a book is not going to change your pain. So it's by actively engaging in the tools that truly calm down your nervous system, things change. So when you're in pain, you're understandably angry and frustrated, and you're trapped, and then you get offered random treatments. So the Zoloft could help 10 or 20%, but the metaphor I use is like fighting a forest fire. It takes multiple strategies to fight a forest fire. It'll take multiple strategies to solve your pain. For some people, sleep is absolute. You can take Zoloft, but if you're not sleeping, it's not going to work. So you got to sleep, you got to exercise, you got to take the right medications. So it's always a combination of things that's going to be unique to you to solve that problem. So with this particular show, you know, I'm excited about people get better. A lot of people read the book and they go, Hanscom's a charlatan. This is just craziness. And you have to engage. Really, it does work if you engage in the tools actively. But, I agree, a random treatment like Zoloft may help a little bit, but it's probably not going to solve the whole problem.
Let's go to Las Vegas on Skype. Jeff's with us. Hey, Jeff, let's get you in here. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Jeff.
Hi. Serendipitously, I woke up to take pain medication and turned on the radio. I have severe spinal injuries, both cervical and lumbar, from combination military and a lot of other things that have gone on in my life. I have bone spurs in the spinal column in the cervical area. I get, the long story short, I'm not going to go through a long litany here. The only solution that's been offered, and believe me, I've explored artificial disc replacement, I've explored a lot of different areas, is a complete fusion on my cervical area from C2 to C7. All what you're now giving me is a little bit of hope, except here's where the hope changes. The pain relief, I'm currently on extended release morphine plus breakthrough medication to control the pain. That allows me to function and work. Without it, I'm not able to work, and I work at a fairly high level in what I do. My fear in having, and I've been putting off the surgery for a long time, was that would just make the pain worse.
Yeah.
But if I can learn to handle it prior to that going on, it would also obviously remove partial function and some of the medications, the side effects we won't even go into. So the morphine, et cetera, has been the least damaging of the potential medications that were offered. And I know how to read.
So I handle the medications a little differently than most pain doctors do.
Good.
And so what I would do is, again, you take control. So as people go through the different exercises and the pain starts to drop down, then the side effects of the medications become worse. And so the people that have come off, you know, 1,000 milligrams of oxycodone or morphine a day have done it on their own. In other words, they have control of that too. So what we try to do is we're trying to decrease the pain, which medications are fine initially. Then, again, the goal here is pain-free, full functional limitation, no medications. And so that'll happen in its own time. It may take 6 months, may take a year, maybe take 2 years. But you take control of your own meds and start dropping them down sometimes with medical supervision. But as the pain goes away, you really don't want the meds. I'm guessing you're probably not happy about being on medications. You're probably not happy about the pain. But again, what you're telling me does not really do well with surgery. Again, I don't have your x-rays, I don't have your scans, et cetera. So the surgery can help arm pain from bone spurs. The bone spurs themselves do not cause neck pain or back pain. And that's been shown in the literature over and over and over again. So if you're doing surgery for neck pain or back pain, it simply does not work.
The name of the book, of course, is Back in Control, David Henscomb, MD. David, thanks again for being on the program, my friend. I appreciate
it. Enjoy it. Yeah, thank you very much.
Now, filling in for me tomorrow as I head back through Denver to do Beyond Belief, then Los Angeles, Jimmy Church will be manning the desk. Let's hope I don't get an ice storm here in St. Louis, or I'll never be able to get out of here. Thanks to Nathan Staton, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.